Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host and the producer of Right Here, Right Now is Andy Lowe. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dr. Tim. How's the weekend treat you?
It was great. I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. How was yours?
It was much better. I had a good recovery week and feel 100% again.
Yeah, for those of you who weren't listening last week, he did a half triathlon, and it took the better of him.
Well, I did the full triathlon.
You did the full.
Well, no, I'm teasing you on semantics. It was a half iron distance.
Oh, triathlon. It was a half. Yeah. Okay, that was it. You did the full. Sorry, you caught me on that. But you came in here last Tuesday. Whoa.
Yeah, it was rough. It was. It was, you know, 70.3 mile race, but it was in the mountains up in Ellijay, and definitely difficult terrain.
But you're back now.
I'm back and ready to go. So,
well, I am so glad for that. Okay, well, today we're going to talk about, where did that idea come from? Have you ever had that reaction when you read a book title? And oftentimes that reaction is closely followed with, well, why didn't I think of that? Or maybe your reaction is to go more deeply into your mind to scavenge for book ideas. My guests for today's broadcast have each created intriguing books with amazing content. And they will share with us how they came up with the idea and created the book. And our guests are Sam Devine. His book is Battlegrounds to Boardrooms, Life Lessons from the Liberian Civil War to Corporate America. And I also have Dr. Sheb True, who served as editor for Business Acumen. I know that word, and I tripped over it anyway. But here we go. Samuel Devine is a CPA and business advisor. His company is Cross Atlantic Business Advisors, bridging African roots and Western experience for superior results. He grew up in Liberia during some of the most intense years of civil war, and he came to the United States for college, graduating from the University of Massachusetts in Lowell, and now you're just kind of here, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome, Stan. Tell us about your writing journey. How did Battlegrounds to Boardrooms, Life Lessons from the Liberian Civil War to Corporate America, come to life?
Well, the idea came to me because I've got two young kids who are blessed not to have gone through the Civil War. They're both were born here and are mm-hmm. fairly young. And I thought there were a lot of lessons that I learned even in the midst of this very dark period. And I really need to put that down because that shaped my life. And so one day, as they get older, they'll be able to read this book and understand a lot more about their dad that mm-hmm. you may not talk about in just regular conversation.
Oh, absolutely. And how old are your children?
6 and 3.
So they're not even quite close to being ready to understand, are they?
Yeah. My daughter's tried to read it, but mm-hmm. she's still too young.
Have you taken them back to Liberia?
We are working on getting them back there. We, you know, try to make sure we get all the vaccines mm-hmm. done. So the 3-year-old still hasn't crossed that threshold yet.
Yeah, and that's the cholera shot and the yellow fever shot and yep. all of those wonderful yep. little pincushion things. I can talk knowingly, and as we talk about before we go on air, this is radio. Y'all can't see what we're doing, but I have on my West African shirt just for Sam Devine, but I used to live in Ghana, West Africa, and I've returned several times. I was in Ghana at the time that J.J. Rowling staged his first coup. You're familiar with that, aren't
yep,
you?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, all of West Africa knows when things like that happen.
That's right, and you know, fortunately nowadays, it's a little less in vogue to have coups, and the last several, you know, you've actually mm-hmm. had the West African ECOWAS, the mm-hmm. West African group, stand up and say, you know, we need democratically elected leaders, and they've actually pushed back several coup leaders.
So and that's great, isn't it?
That's a huge improvement.
Well, share with our listeners what it was. What happened? There was Doe, there was Taylor, there was Prince Johnson.
Yep. It all started for Liberia, I think, with the first coup, which was 1980. And at the time, Liberia was founded by freed slaves from the U.S. who had returned. And unfortunately, they were a minority in the country, but they were the ruling minority. And in 1980, the majority took over through a coup. Mm-hmm. And for the majority of the folks, this seemed like a great opportunity for redemption. And then ultimately, things deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, there was an election that everyone in Liberia considered fairly rigged.
Mm-hmm.
And things further deteriorated with Charles Taylor coming in. He came in initially as a hero in 1989 because he was promising, he promised the Liberians an opportunity to get rid of Samuel Doe. And then eventually we know how his story ended.
Mm-hmm.
On April 26 with a guilty verdict at The Hague for mm-hmm. crimes against humanity in Sierra Leone. So it really started in 1980. Prior to that, there were 133 years of free and fair elections. Liberia was the model mm-hmm. for democracy within the continent and actually did a lot to help some of our brothers and sisters, including in Ghana, get independence.
Absolutely. And I know when the turmoil came in Ghana, and it was in 1979-80 as well,
yeah,
because that's when I was living there, a lot of people moved to Liberia, and
yep.
they got there and said, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's funny because half of my elementary teachers were Ghanaians.
Like, were they?
Yeah, Ghanaians or Nigerians, because mm-hmm. Liberia was the, you know, almost like the U.S. of the region at the time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. When you began to write this, did you have any fears, concerns, worries, nightmares, any of that?
Not worries. It definitely brought back some painful memories that mm-hmm. you sort of try to tuck away in the deep recesses of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially parts of the war where, you know, our compound, our home was sort of attacked. Those memories
mm-hmm.
I had tried to lock away, and those had to come back as I was writing this. So, and also the time you mentioned Prince Johnson in the intro, there was mm-hmm. a time where our family was directly in his sights mm-hmm. to harm us, and so
you were on his killing list,
exactly.
Right?
So there was that brought back memories that mm-hmm. we would have been killed.
Yeah,
my father and the rest of us had there not been a kind gentleman who basically gave us a warning to get out of our house on a Monday morning while we're preparing to go to school.
That had to be shocking.
That was extremely shocking. In fact, my dad, who was nowhere involved in any other politics, was so surprised that he kept trying to deny or trying to argue that this guy must have been wrong. And this gentleman who was a colonel, basically very military-like, said, I don't need you to rationalize this. There'll be a lot of time for you to do that. You just need to get out of here and not come back.
Boy, that's serious, isn't
yeah.
it? Oh, man. And you did, didn't you?
And we did, and we were fortunate because that very evening, Prince Johnson came with a couple of his soldiers. He showed up. Yeah.
Now, when you wrote about that and kind of going into hiding, it reminded me of, here we go, blanking, Anne Frank.
Yep.
Because you were hiding, but not really, but. Can
yeah.
you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it was an interesting event because Liberia at the time was sort of marked off into these territories. Prince Johnson was supportive of the ECOWAS peacekeepers mm-hmm. who were running the center city, but he still had an area that he controlled where we happened to live. But I was a normal teenager at the time, so I still had to go to school. My siblings had to go to school as well. So we left and went into the center city because that was safe with the ECOWAS protection. ECOMOG was mm-hmm. the peacekeeping force protection. But, you know, Prince Johnson still was able to roam. The only potential protection was that hopefully he wouldn't go crazy where the peacekeepers were because mm-hmm. they might have, you know, retaliated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they would have for just a normal family, but that at least kept us going. So yeah. we were we were going to school, doing different things that we, you know, had to do. But at night, we were trying to make sure we were as protected as possible so that no one knew where we stayed.
And Johnson did come into the place where you were staying.
Yes, we were holed up the first week or so. We were holed up in a hotel that was very secluded hotel that many folks didn't really know existed. And it, needless to say, it wasn't a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
It was one of those where it was just barely above a motel grade. And so we holed up in there, and the owner was a friend of the family, and he had us in a room that he never rented out. He just used for his own family, mm-hmm. Guests. And so we were holed up in that room, and because this was a secluded hotel, it also made a good place for a guy like Johnson to bring a lady friend who wasn't his wife. Extracurricular activity. Mm. And so while we in the room, we get a note that he was out there at the hotel bar. And so it was sort of a warning to just stay put. And at that night, after he left, we packed up and, you know, had to go find somewhere else to stay.
One more place to go.
Yeah.
How did you decide what stories to share?
Well, what I tried to do was focus specifically on lessons that I learned. So it was, you know, for example, one of the lessons was hard work. So I talked specifically about stories where that lesson was drilled into me by my parents. When I talk a bit about the war and just being surprised about how people who were ordinarily great people and you thought were you know, good neighbors were all of a sudden, you know, the folks who you had to run away from because they were out there with guns shooting people. I kind of talk about just that lesson that, you know, people, there's a quote I used in the book from the Bible, from Jeremiah, that talks about the heart being deceitful and desperately wicked, and who can know the heart. And so I kind of talk about that lesson that you've just got to be careful about. You've got to be aware that people, you know, in different circumstances can be totally different than you would ever imagine.
Okay. Well, then you came to the United States to go to college.
Yes.
And what I find fascinating is many American kids who go off to college are on the 5-year plan. In fact, some schools don't even talk about freshman, sophomore, junior. They have first year, second year. You were on the what plan?
I was on the 3-year plan because I like to pretend that it's because I was just really smart, but really I was on the 3-year plan because I knew that at any given moment, my parents were paying my tuition from Liberia. At any given moment, the war could break out, and so I needed to go out there and take as many courses as possible to get things done so that I would be able to have a degree and be able to help my family in the event that something did happen back home.
And you did it.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, I ended up probably doing it, taking a little harder route by doing accounting and finance instead of just one.
So it wasn't just one major, it was two concentrations in 3 years.
Yes.
Then you went on to your MBA.
Yes. I waited a good number of years for that. I had to take a break after.
Oh, I understand. I understand. What has writing a book, how has that affected your business, even just yourself?
It's been great. It's, you know, when I wrote the book, I wasn't really thinking about it from a business standpoint. It's not a how-to book. It's not the sort of advice that I would give. But where it's helped is it's opened doors for speaking opportunities. I now can also use the book as a collateral from a marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so it's been great. And as the book opens speaking opportunities at those speaking events, you also get an opportunity to meet others who may need consulting services. So it's been a good addition to the business.
What was the hardest part about writing for you?
Well, the biggest challenge was just finding the time. It's very tough, especially when you've got the kids, the family, and work. It was really hard to find time. But what I found was if I just tried to dedicate some part of my day, you know, mm-hmm. whether it was 5 mm-hmm. o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night. As long as I set those time frames, I was able to get a lot more done, you know, when I created some structure for my writing.
And all of those experiences have also impacted your business because you work hard, right?
Yes, yes. That was a huge lesson that my mom kind of beat into us very early. Not physically, but she definitely mm-hmm. got the message drummed into you.
Mm-hmm. When I took my sons over to Ghana back in 2006, we toured some of the schools. And you know what the schools look like.
Yep.
They would never pass muster in the United States. And the libraries are small. And both of my sons, they were, like 26 and 22 at the time, commented that they knew that scholars came out of these facilities, yes. given just the actual blackboards with chalk.
Yep.
And libraries with maybe 15 books in them. And we in this country worry if there are more than 20 students to a teacher.
Yeah.
You have a whole different perspective, don't you?
Yeah, education, and that's one of the lessons I try to have in the book and paint for my kids when they read it, is education is absolutely the most important thing in West Africa and most of Africa and most of the rest of the world. With an education, you have an opportunity to make a difference in your life
you
and the lives
can do
of,
that,
the, of your
you?
Family.
Well, what advice would you give to people who are wanting or thinking about writing a book?
I would say stick with it. Go ahead and do it. I mean, I think I'm always amazed by the reaction that I get to mm-hmm. the book. And sometimes not even from the target audience you expected.
Mm-hmm.
Just folks reading it and they go, you know, this really moved me. I've had folks, the book was more written for a younger audience, maybe someone leaving college that I thought this would be a huge encouragement for, mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. can accomplish and overcome obstacles in their own lives. But I've had even older mothers that have come over to me and said they read it and they related to the stories about my mom and are
sure.
now taking some of those lessons to apply to themselves in raising their kids.
Great. So if people want to be in touch with you, learn more about your business and or get a copy of your book, just talk with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
My website, www.crossatlanticadvisors.com. There's a link to get the book. There are links to follow my speaking and also talk about, you know, what I do from a consulting standpoint.
I got so into the book, I forgot to ask you about your business. Give me a 30-second rundown on Cross Atlantic. What does it do?
So we focus on growth, whether it's domestic or international. We can help you grow your business.
Mm-hmm.
We also focus on optimization. So every business has a lot of processes, and we help you improve those processes.
Identify them.
Exactly.
Okay. So are you willing to sit by while I turn my chair and interview our other guests?
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Well, Dr. Sheb True is Associate Dean of Michael J. Coles College of Business at Kennesaw State University. He is also professor in the Business College, and his focus is on innovative, executive, and international education program development and execution. There is not a sign big enough to put that on a door, is there? That fosters collaboration within and between the academic and corporate institutions, and he was the editor, is the editor of Business Acumen. Welcome, Dr. True.
Morning. Thank you for being here.
Great. You have 17 professors or colleagues or peers who contribute to the first section of the book, and the second segment contains articles from 13 business leaders and executives. How did you determine which of the faculty and the other people not affiliated with the school to contribute?
Well, really the goal of the book was to communicate the message that the Coles College tries to convey to our students.
Mm-hmm.
Kennesaw State University is a very engaged university. So that engagement goes beyond just the classroom. It's really with the marketplace, consulting, and just other services that we can provide. So as opposed to talking to ourselves through academic journals
mm-hmm.
or just talking to the students in the classroom, we wanted to get that message out, what our faculty can contribute to the growth of the economy here in the greater Atlanta area.
Mm-hmm.
So we really just look for a cross-discipline approach that represented everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just look for those that fit together. We have a new one coming out this summer
oh,
that will also you know, expand upon other areas where we didn't touch upon.
Is this Business Acumen 2? Or?
Absolutely. There's the title.
That, well, there you go. See, you don't need my help, darn it. But that's great. You and I were talking a little before we went on air, and I have read through the book, and there was only one article in there that tripped me up, and it had math equations in there. But I share that to say that, you know, I do not have a business background per se. I'm in business now. I have my own company, Right Choice Services. But I understood the stuff that's in there, and it really made sense, and it was helpful for me. And you did not pay me to say that, did you?
Oh, no, I didn't. It's a state budget. We can't pay for that. That's, no, you know, that's the really goal of the book. When I talked to the faculty, said, look, we want to communicate to the business people out there what are important trends and lessons that they've learned and what they teach in the classroom. But don't communicate in a way that we talk to each other and through our research.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, think about how you communicate in the classroom. So most of them really avoided more you know, a research approach.
Mm-hmm.
But that one article by George Manners, I think it's still a great article because you just can't dumb down some things. You've really got to communicate, you know, what the point is. And, you know, our audiences are people who have MBAs or have a business degree or working in a business career. So it's, they're going to relate to it.
Sure.
And sometimes it's good to learn something you don't know and figure out what to build upon.
That's right. Now, your role as editor was what?
Really just organized a bunch of cats, I think.
But that's tough. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it was really, you know, just to, first to communicate the intent of the book. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when we talked to the faculty, saying this is what we're trying to do. We want to get that message out as a service
mm-hmm.
To the business community about these are the things we're doing here at Kennesaw State University. This is what we can do for you. And hopefully there's some takeaways for you and your business that really to get them thinking. And that mm-hmm. was the goal. Say, get the audience thinking about this topic, and then they can contact us if they have more questions. They perhaps they'll engage with us in terms of enrolling in a program.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, our mission is to serve the community. So it was really just be of service. And so it was really going back and forth with them. And as a professor myself, trying to talk to them, make sure that they weren't talking to other academics, that they were communicating to a business audience.
Yeah, I like that. I like that, and especially the image of shepherding cats. Now, I'm sure you're aware that oftentimes some of the best schools are not seen as so good in their own communities. Tell our listeners about the ranking of your business college. It's pretty formidable.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, we're Kennesaw State, and not too long ago, not too many people heard of us.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing good things for a long time, and but we just kept at our mission and what we're trying to do. We had great leadership from the president to our dean, and you know, I think Business Week recognized that when we got, I think, number 29 in the U.S., number 4 here in the South. But it was really built upon just being engaged.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of Kennesaw State University is to be an engaged university. We operate across the spectrum from research to service and consulting, but we're always student-oriented and we're always community-oriented. So at the university level, it's engagement. Now, our former dean, who's now the provost, Ken Harmon, really preached to us that his mantra was, we want to be the most relevant business school in the South.
Okay.
And there's a place in academia for everybody, for, you know, for those who just want to talk to other academics,
mm-hmm.
to look at peer research. We need that. But we felt that our mission, really, at Kennesaw State was to engage our students and ourselves with the business community. And so that was really the mission that drove us. And we think that's what's really helped us in terms of our enrollments,
mm-hmm.
The feedback we get from our alumni, from the companies that hire our alumni, as well as our faculty when they engage in consulting and just other community service activities.
So sort of like pragmatic, practical.
Absolutely.
And that seems appropriate from my perspective, given that it's the Michael J. Coles College of Business, because Michael was the founder of the Great American Cookie, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And then he was the head of Caribou for a while?
Yes, and that's, you know, we have a very entrepreneurial spirit there, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, having Michael J. Coles as a benefactor has been a very big inspiration for it. Our former dean, Tim Mescon, was really engaged in university and entrepreneurship. Now our entrepreneurship department is a leader in the country in that area. But entrepreneurship is just not one discipline. You know, it kind of mm-hmm. bleeds over into all of our disciplines, and we really have an entrepreneurial spirit. We've had to be innovative
mm-hmm.
Because we weren't one of the big boys.
Sure.
So we had to make sure that we found a niche, and that relevance and that mm-hmm. connecting with the immediate needs of the business community is what we've really tried to preach and send our students out to be able to do so they can hit the ground running. And I think that's what the book tried to communicate.
I think it's done a great job of that. Now, Kennesaw has established a doctorate in business. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And again, this was a very innovative program. Most PhDs in business across the country, like myself, had to quit their career and give up 4 or 5 years of their life for very little money and spend a lot of time on it, which is a very important step that we need that. But there is a crisis, I guess you could say, in the academy. A lot of business professors are retiring, and with the growth of higher education, there's a shortage of professors. But we saw a way of growing that growth, meeting that growth, but without sacrificing quality. Because what's happened is a result of people wanting having to give up 4 or 5 years full-time income to go to a PhD program is that you have a lot of younger and younger professors coming into the profession with very little experience.
Yeah.
So what we've designed is a program is for people with 25 years or more.
Oh, my.
And they can keep their executive jobs and go through this program. It's a part-time program, but we call it a full-time part-time program.
Okay.
It's very intense. It's research-oriented, and it meets the standards of what they would get in a regular PhD program. But it's really catered to their lifestyle. But it's also catered to the acumen that they bring, their experience. And we're showing them how to be scholars, teaching them how to be scholars, and so they can do more than just tell war stories, that they understand how science applies to business and the analysis of it. And what the result is then you have people who graduate with our doctorate, which we just had our first graduating class this year, going into the academy to teach, who are bringing 25, 30 years of experience, but they also have the research and scholarly training, and we think this is going to be better for higher education as a whole.
Wow. That's got to be exciting.
Oh, that's absolutely. It's a fascinating program. We've got our students already placed in many jobs, and we know that they're going to be doing some great things. That's what we really need is to keep that connection. So we don't want to be the contributors to that ivory tower. We want it to be connected.
In the trenches, on the front lines.
Right.
I like that. Who determined what the contributors would write? Did you just ask them to write, or did you kind of have a guideline in what you wanted them to write about?
I gave them a lot of freedom. I think that's the nature of academia. We have academic freedom. And, I went to the different disciplines, the management, marketing, entrepreneurship, finance, and family business, and so on, sales, which were our strong points. And, I selected some faculty that I knew were great teachers, do a lot of business consulting, and they're great writers. And I just said, look, I'd like you to write something that you want to communicate to the business audience. But not to an academic audience, and really left it up to them. Now, when we went to our friends of the Coles College, the executives in the Atlanta area, I gave them a little bit more direction, and what we talked about was leadership there, because that's a focal point of our university and our college. But as far as the faculty goes, I wanted them to just write on their expertise and what they felt was something important to be out there. For example, the very first article by Dr. Ken Harmon, who was our dean at the time, who's now the provost of the university, he wrote on managing happiness. He's an accountant, by the way. But he's been a leader in academia for a while, a dean at several schools. And so he's responsible for managing all of us. And so he's really been big into the management literature about how do you motivate and lead people. And the happiness literature is really growing. That's where he's gotten involved in. And so, they picked their strengths, but they also picked things that they thought was very relevant.
I like that. I'll tell you the one article that jumps out at me is the Bob Barr on leadership. And it was what I would say so typical of Bob Barr. You need to be, if you're going to be a leader, lead.
Right.
Don't take a neutral position. And he goes on to say, and I told you I wouldn't ask you specifics, and I'm not going to. So, but it is so apt, even though this book came out 2 years ago, when you look at what's happening in the political arena today, people are being accused of flip-flopping, can't stay put, can't stay on point, can't this. And Bob says, you need to make a decision, determine where you stand, and go with it. Otherwise, you can't provide effective leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. He did a great job. And Bob Barsh, he's actually taught a couple of courses
Has he?
At Kennesaw State in our program, in our Master's of Public Administration. And you know, again, it's academic freedom. You know, mm-hmm. we want people from all perspectives.
Sure.
And there are articles in there that maybe I disagree with or mm-hmm. come from a different perspective. But, you know, our whole goal is to get the word out there and then let the people decide.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were happy to have Bob. We'd love to have someone from a different perspective talk about leadership. And the new Business Acumen 2 comes out in August. We're going to have some other articles that I think really take a big stance on leadership because it follows the same format.
Oh, there you took that question right out of my mouth. It's different, but it follows the same kind of format?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's the same in the sense that we've got business executives writing about leadership because, mm-hmm. I mean, that is the most important thing. But the faculty are writing on different areas. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot more focus on family business in this new edition because family business is one area that we really focus on. It's one of our strengths, one of the best programs in the country. So we've got 3 or 4 articles that focus on growing a family business. But and also international articles. We focus a little bit more on international because we're really involved in a lot of global activities in Atlanta and beyond.
Now, you mentioned before even we're in the studio, not just before we went on air, but even before we're in the studio, that you have a connection with Ghana in this coming year.
Well, yes. Every year for the last 20 years or so, we've had something called the Year Of program.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we focus on one particular country, from Russia, China, India, London, the UK, mm-hmm. and so on. This past year was the year of Peru. But starting in August will be the year of Ghana. So for 11 months, the university will be focused totally on Ghana, which means that every week there's an activity across the campus, a cultural activity. So it could be about science, music, or education, food, in terms of just communicating the culture.
Mm-hmm.
We also have classes that will be taught across different colleges that focus on Ghana, business in Ghana, education in Ghana, or science. We'll bring in guest speakers from Ghana. And of course, we'll tap into the Ghana community here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm already going to be getting Sam to come over and talk about his book there as well, because I think mm-hmm. it's very important for us to reach out. It's really for us to help internationalize our students.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage our students to study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just about them going somewhere. We also want to bring the world to them.
Absolutely.
And then also, you know, the community is invited to all of our events.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to make sure that we are good servants to Georgia and the metro Atlanta area in terms of helping internationalize their education about the world. So I think Year of Ghana is next year, and then after that's the Year of Japan.
Oh, my. That's quite a diverse approach to Kate.
Oh, yeah, we've been all over the world in terms of focus.
What is your role as the associate dean?
Well, my particular role is to focus on the graduate programs.
Okay.
So I help lead our Master's of Business Administration
mm-hmm.
Programs, and I'm also in charge of our undergrad International Business Program. But really the key is there is to work with our faculty to help them be able to do their job,
mm-hmm.
and their job is to teach. And so I have to really set up the logistics of the program to make sure that they can do what they do best and not have to worry about the details, and then make sure the interests of our students are served,
mm-hmm.
That we get the right students into the program and that they follow the right path, and that kind of monitor them and make sure that they are getting the degree and the value that they paid for and that they've earned, and that those that don't make it. But then it's really, I think, just to serve as a brand, a steward for the Coast College and Kennesaw State University.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also teach.
A little bit still. I don't have too much time anymore because of all administrative work, but I do get to go up to our MBA program that's in Dalton, Georgia, and uh-huh. I teach there once a year. And then our executive MBA program, I teach several different units coming in here and there. So I don't teach full-time mm-hmm. now, but I'll go back to that one day.
But you keep it in your to-do list, though, so that you have a sense of what the classroom is like and the students are like.
Oh, absolutely. I want to be there, and I hope I do a good job. But mm-hmm. I think it's important. All of our administrators are involved in the classroom in some way.
That's great.
I have a full class I'm responsible for in the MBA program, but then I also teach in the executive program where I come in for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, I'm interacting with the faculty and the chairs and to make sure I kind of have a hand on the pulse
of okay.
What's going on, because that's important, and it's what I really got into this profession for. So not too many people stick with administration too long. It's not the fun part of the university,
sure.
But it's important, and I enjoy it. But one day I'll step back and be a full-time faculty member, and I think my life will probably be a lot happier then.
Great, great. So people want to be in touch with you, Dr. True. They want to learn about the school, the college. They maybe even want to get a copy of the book. What's the best way to do that?
Well, I think go to KSUMBA.com. And, you know, we got too many copies of the book left. We could get more. But the book is available digitally on our website. So when you go to KSUMBA.com, it's right there. And the new one will be coming out in August.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd love to talk with anybody about how Kennesaw State could serve their business, mm-hmm. serve their community. Because that's really what our role is as part of the university system in Georgia, is to serve the community. We have a lot of great innovative programs for degrees. But also our executive education appeals to those who just want to come back and hone in their skills without pursuing a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of great students who are very much engaged in the local community in terms of internships and research, but also around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have, in fact, this weekend I just sent students to Guatemala,
wow.
Italy, and to China. And so they're going to learn to contribute, and then they'll come back and then share those experiences.
Go to Cole School of Business and see the world.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to open up the mics for conversation, and I want to start off by simply saying, Sam, I think you and I need to be there when they serve fufu and kenki and palm nut stew. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Make you hungry?
Yeah, I know. You've got me going. Now I'm going to have to go home and try to cook something African.
Well, those are the most popular events we have is when the food is served always.
That was the food. That was it. You could, if nothing else, you could have palm nut stew and fufu, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Or sliced yam or whatever.
Or a little bit of cassava leaf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I made a note that Sheb was talking about accounting and management, and that's right down your field, isn't it? Did you perk up and listen?
Definitely. I mean, I've been blessed to have a great career in accounting, and then eventually was very fortunate to branch off and do non-accounting sides of business, more marketing and mm-hmm. product strategy related work. And so, but I always try to give back, and I think the accounting degree is probably one of the best ways to get into business and understand what business is all about.
Now, as you listen to him talk about what they try to do at the Cole School College of Business, were you cheering him on?
Absolutely. I started to write a lot of notes. He and I will have an extensive conversation after.
Oh,
after
boy.
This.
But that's what we like to get happening here. What can you pick on something in particular that you might want to share or challenge Dr. True on in sense of this is what I've done with it, this is the impact it had, or kudos for what they're trying to do?
I'll go with the kudos route on two fronts. One, the international business focus. I think the world has become much, much smaller
mm-hmm.
than it used to be when I was growing up. And I believe that we all need to see this world as one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him kudos for that. The second is just the entrepreneurial focus that they have. Because, you know, I think we're in the world where most of the growth is going to come from entrepreneurial companies and not the big companies. And I think we need to have students thinking about how they can impact the world as a whole from mm-hmm. an entrepreneurial standpoint.
Well, Dr. True, I got a question for you regarding kind of that line of thinking. So first off, let me say, I know Kennesaw State University has done a fantastic job with being able to really bring business knowledge and expertise to the students that it's taught, but yet we know that education as a whole has been very unsuccessful at that. We've been cranking out tons of business people that really don't know anything about business. They have an academic perspective, no real world knowledge, skill, or expertise. How have you guys been able to overcome that hurdle and really produce business people that kind of hit the ground with a leg up where they actually understand business and how to be entrepreneurial?
Yeah, well, the President Papp has actually given a directive to the whole university, not just the business school, but it's really apt for us about our need to push for internships and co-ops so that they get that experience. And so that's we've got to push that to get them involved. But I think the other approach is to understand that we're not training scholars at the undergraduate level. That so what our faculty have done is really engaged the business community. Many of our courses, students serve as consultants for small businesses. They interact with businesses. They learn about it. And that's really just getting involved. I think the other thing we've done is we've hired faculty that have business experience. We have very few faculty with little business experience. So we need some of those because you need those who are really just pure researchers and who can help to grow the discipline. But really, the majority of our faculty walk in with a lot of experience, and they're encouraged to keep engaged. Some universities and perhaps more traditional universities, sometimes that's frowned upon. But for our faculty to be engaged with the business community is a plus. And so I think that's what we've really approached, that. And just getting involved in any way we can. I mentioned before that we have some students to Guatemala. What they're doing down there is for 3.5 weeks, they're working with small businesses and trying to help them learn how to grow their businesses at a very fundamental level, because the people down there don't really understand a lot what they're trying to do. These are very small businesses. But it's, so it's a give and take, and it's a two-way learning street. And that's the key. You know, our kind of mantra is to improve lives through business education. So we really, you know, want our students to grow, our faculty to grow, but also the community. The final thing is that there has been a lot of criticism, probably rightly so, of business schools graduates coming up not having that experience. But the reality is they're not going to. That's we've got to make sure that we know what we're getting into, that it's not an automatic, I know everything when I graduate about business. That they understand that they've got the foundations and the principles, and so that they would be better off than somebody who doesn't have those. But they're still going to have to get in the trenches and roll up their sleeves. Mm-hmm. But they're not walking into the C-suite right when they get out. And so I think it's a lot of expectations of what students or parents perhaps have. I pay for this for education. Why aren't they running a business now? And they've really got to start from the ground up. But hopefully they've got that foundation.
Now, how do you guys deal with the challenge of teaching something that isn't as finite? Like, you take accounting. I mean, there's rules of accounting. You know, you have the debits, the credits. I mean, there's certain things that are just fundamental and you can easily teach. But entrepreneurship, there's so many different directions, and we've seen people be successful with a variety of strategies. Right. So how do you educate students in something that is as abstract as entrepreneurship?
Oh, yeah. And in my discipline, marketing, it's not an exact science. And entrepreneurship
right.
is not. So the key is really getting to understand what the objective is. In marketing, for example, it's just understanding really what you're trying to sell. Mm-hmm. What is it that people want? What is it that you're trying to offer in value? And knowing that there's a lot of models. If there was some quick, easy formula like in finance or accounting, we'd all be rich.
Wouldn't we?
We'd know exactly how to do it. So it is difficult, but that's where I think getting different perspectives and getting involved in the community, in the business community, allows them to see the different paths and models to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult task, but it's really it's finding that passion inside, but harnessing it. You know, because the entrepreneurship's blessing is their passion, but sometimes that's their curse, is that they can't kind of see the path. So our job is to help them understand how to take that passion and not really constrain it, but really give it some parameters in terms of what the effect of certain decisions will be.
Yeah, and that's something, Sam, you kind of brought up in one of your lessons that I kind of see the parallel in. I think the title of the chapter was, you know, hold on to your values, but treat others with respect. And that seems like kind of what Kennesaw has done. They've held on to the educational values, but they've treated the business community with respect in order to open themselves up to ideas. Tell us a little bit more about how that lesson translated in your book and what you've seen in corporate America.
Well, so from the book standpoint, the lesson was really pretty important. I kind of hold that lesson to be one of the most dear to me, because it really is what saved our lives when Prince Johnson came to us. And so, to further elaborate, the colonel who told us we had to get out of town right away wasn't in the circle of Johnson. And so there was someone else who was that reached out to the colonel and told him. And along the way, that meant that if my dad had not treated everybody with respect, that person wouldn't have taken it upon himself or herself to tell the colonel. The colonel also wouldn't have taken the initiative to really get us out of Dodge if my parents hadn't treated him with respect. So that lesson I really got to, you know, that was the ultimate example of that lesson, and I really hold it dear. In business, you'll end up seeing folks who come into an office to talk to the president. This happens even in consulting. Come to talk to the highest level of the company, and they tend to ignore everyone else they talk to as you know, irrelevant or unimportant. And what I've learned in business is that oftentimes your best way in is through treating everyone the same, because you never know. You know, that executive may be busy and may have to scratch you off, and because you treated the administrative assistant properly,
you know,
someone else gets scratched off, so 5 minutes are made for you. So,
okay. Well, the clock is on us. Happens every week, and we welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for handling the controls, the questions you ask. You're good.
They keep me around.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you to our guests, Sam Devine and Dr. Sheb True. Sam, your contact information again?
www.crossatlanticadvisors.com.
Okay. And Dr. True, your contact information?
ksumba.com.
Simple and quick, both of you. We appreciate that. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rite.choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email, invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.